Good evening. Thank you for having me here. It's a pleasure to be here. As the only person not from an academic institution, I think I need to introduce myself first. I work at the Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. This is a Department of Energy laboratory that is managed by the University of California at Berkeley. And so while my pen is owned by the Department of Energy, I am actually an employee of the University of California. And I'd also like to start by one of the most important messages that I have for you tonight about Lawrence Berkeley National Laboratory. Our acronym is LBNL, and what that stands for is Lawrence Berkeley, not Livermore. Livermore National Laboratory is where the U.S.'s nuclear arsenal is designed and where they're trying to recreate the fusion that takes place on the sun. My laboratory is about 50 miles away, and we do no classified research. Instead of making bombs, we make Nobel Prizes. On the slide that Jeff showed earlier, showing the periodic chart, if you look very closely, the things that you didn't have to actually learn in chemistry include elements like berkelium, californium, americium, lawrencium, seaborgium. These were all discovered at my laboratory. So it's a non-classified facility, a multi-purpose science laboratory, and in my area, we're doing work on electricity policy. So what I've been asked to do tonight is talk about a really quite remarkable public policy development in California, in which the state legislature, as a result of action by our state legislature, our Public Utilities Commission has directed our investor-owned utilities to procure 1.3 gigawatts of electricity storage over the next 5 years. To give you a sense of the magnitude of that amount of electricity storage, the peak demand for my state is approximately 60 megawatts. So this is like about 2-3% of the installed capacity of the state. To put it into another perspective, in the United States altogether, there's about 23 gigawatts of pump storage, and about 1 gigawatt of all other forms of storage. So when California is done, they will have doubled the installed capacity of non-pumped hydro electricity storage in various forms within our state. What I'm going to talk about is sort of what was the motivation for California to take this aggressive technology-forcing action. And I'm going to spend quite a bit of time talking about the public process that our Public Utilities Commission underwent to determine what those targets would be and how they would be implemented. And I'll close with the sort of a summary of what it is we're actually going to do, and then I'll look forward to your questions at the very end. So the actions that were taken in California really are the culmination or the latest installment of a long series of public policies in California aimed toward reducing the emissions of greenhouse gases. So I would say the keystone for this policy was a law passed in my state in 2006 that would reduce our greenhouse gas emissions to 1990 levels by the year 2020. That's about a 15% reduction from where they were at in 2006 when the law was passed. That's led us to also pass a law called the Renewables Portfolio Standard, mandating that we will get 33% of our electricity from renewable energy sources by the year 2020. It's been supplemented by a very generous incentive program that pays down the cost of solar generation facilities, both residential PV as well as central solar stations. We have a federal production tax credit that provides a great subsidy to the wind industry. So a lot of very aggressive greenhouse gas reducing policies, as well as renewable energy forcing policies. I didn't also mention that we also have a loading order in California, which says that utilities, in terms of looking to meet their resource needs going forward, will first look at energy efficiency, second, demand response, and third, renewable energy, before looking to conventional sources for expanding the source of supply. So you have a series of different public policies all forcing these issues forward, and it's in this context that our legislature adopted a target and directed our Public Utilities Commission to determine, and I want to talk about this determination process very much in my presentation, determine whether it would be appropriate to have a procurement target for energy storage. So this doesn't occur in a vacuum, but rather in the context of a variety of other public policies that are going on. So let's talk about the California Public Utilities Commission. In my country, we have several kinds of utility forms of organization. And in California, the dominant form of organization is where the utilities are owned by private investors. These are called investor-owned utilities. And in return for the monopoly franchise that they're granted over a geographic service territory, they submit to a public process, an administrative law process, that is managed by the California Public Utilities Commission, in which their rates are adjudicated in a public process in which testimony is heard about what the rate should be, intervening parties debate, judges make a ruling, and then a panel of five commissioners ultimately make the decision. So that applies to the three major, this law applies to the three major utilities in my state. That's the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, shown in blue, the Southern California Edison Company, shown in pink, and the San Diego Gas and Electric Company, shown in green at the bottom. Those three companies together account for about 70% of the electricity use in the state of California. So again, this law really is speaking only to that process. So this is really going to be a talk more about regulatory policy and economics. And as a consequence, this is the last picture that I'll actually show. In fact, I have a slide with text on it that you can't even read. So you're going to see some words in the next few slides here. But what I really want to focus on is the process by which we came to this decision about adopting this target for the energy storage. So the PUC went through a very deliberative process to determine whether there was a justification for having a procurement target. And they started by identifying what the applications of storage might be. This is all done through a public hearing process where people come and offer their perspectives. There's many workshops. Everything is on the web. In fact, for those of you who have an interest, you can go to this website, and all the documents that I'll be drawing on from this presentation are publicly posted, along with a number of other informational sources about energy storage and its applicability in California. And one that's of particular interest is where we do analysis of the cost effectiveness of energy storage. And those are analyses that might be of interest to you. So these are the applications. Bulk storage on the transmission system really looks at putting a storage to even out the loads, even out that duck curve that was shown earlier. Ancillary services, those were also mentioned by Professor Kirshen. Those referred to the frequency regulation and the ramping activities. On-site generation in this case, and on-site generation variable, involves co-locating the storage at a generation site. Obviously, the ones with the variable generation are the ones that are of more interest here. They also consider distribution applications, looking at relieving the peak demands on distribution feeders. Also, the idea of controlling them from utility substations. And also, the idea of community energy storage, which was one of the concepts that was presented very recently here. In addition to these utility grid applications, they've also considered customer-sited applications. Bill management refers to a situation in California where we have a lot of customers who are on time-differentiated tariffs where the price of electricity is high during the middle of the day and it's low at night, and that presents an arbitrage opportunity for energy storage. Bill management with market participation refers to being able to sort of arbitrage against your electricity rates as well as participate potentially in the wholesale electricity market that's run by the California Independent System Operator. Behind the meter and load control, that refers to something very similar to what Professor Bernier was talking about, and where the utility might control the load on some of your appliances that have storage built into them, such as thermal storage, to provide system relief as well as trying to minimize the impact on the amenity that's provided by those end-use devices. Permanent load shedding is also sort of what Professor Bernier was talking about, thermal energy storage being the most prominent example. Sort of, again, taking advantage of the rate differential to load up a storage system when the price of electricity is low and discharge it when the price of electricity is high. And then, of course, there's electric vehicle charging. So for each of these use cases, then through a deliberative process, to consider the following questions, which is energy storage actually, are the technologies actually viable for providing these applications? If they are viable, if they're operationally feasible, what are the potential benefits? Do they have benefits? Now, are these benefits that someone can take to the bank, or are these benefits for which markets do not yet exist, or which are intangible, and so it's very difficult to assign a benefit to them? Given both the benefits that you could quantify, monetize, et cetera, as well as those that you can't, can you make a determination whether it's a good idea? Is it cost-effective in the broader societal sense of the term to have storage in these applications? So again, this is a very deliberative process about, you know, why should we have a public policy to promote this? And specifically, if it is cost-effective, but it's not being taken up by the marketplace, what's holding things up? What are the barriers in our regulations, in our laws, in the way the markets are operating that prevent the storage that is cost-effective and ought to be beneficial to society from being realized? And it's in that context that the Public Utilities Commission considers this question of, should we therefore have a target to try to stimulate the adoption of this technology? So it's really not sort of that, you know, they didn't just start out like, okay, the legislature said, you know, you should procure all this storage, so let's just go figure out what the rules are for procurement. Instead, they wanted to go through a very deliberative process of what should be procured, why should it be procured, and use that to inform the decision about how it should be procured. So here's a slide that I don't expect you to read. But what this slide does is down here, they identified a number of barriers, and I want to spend some time talking about them. But then they also looked across both the different regulatory proceedings that they had underway, as well as proceedings that go on by organizations outside their jurisdiction. The FERC is our federal energy regulator. The California ISO, you've heard about. And the California Energy Commission is yet another regulatory entity in California that's responsible for, say, building energy efficiency standards, among other things. And so they look at these barriers, and they see which ones need to be addressed either in this proceeding, the energy storage proceeding that I'll be talking about, or other proceedings that are, I can't make it work, that are in place in California. So both, what are the barriers, how should they be addressed, what forum should they be addressed through, and therefore how to proceed. So let me just talk about what some of these barriers are. The first is this issue of the system need. Is there actually a need for storage in the system? Is there some sort of requirement that derives us to have storage? The second one, I'm going to read these because I know you can't see them, there's a lack of a cohesive regulatory framework. You know, there is not a market for some of the products that storage could provide, like this ramping product that we've just talked about. Ramping is a system need, but there's no way to procure it except through what the system operator actually does. So it's very difficult to see how storage could make any money unless the system operator was going to make an offer or a tender to get that kind of ramping product. That also speaks into this, whether there are markets for these products. Resource adequacy accounting refers to, you know, whether you can count the storage against targets we have. I told you about this efficiency, demand response, renewables, loading order. How would storage count into that? There is an absence of actually a method for determining cost effectiveness. One of the key outcomes of this proceeding was to put information into the record such that a definitive mechanism could be identified and used by the regulators going forward in evaluating the kinds of investments that the utilities are going to make. Next was, how would the utilities get their money back from making these investments in these storage in activities? The other was sort of, what were the prices that would be paid for storage? And that goes hand in hand with the sort of the market question. Finally, there's a lack of commercial operating experience, and how would you get over that as a barrier to having lots more storage on the system? And finally, it was this issue of there's not a real interconnection process. There's interconnection processes for distributed generation, but storage is yet a different animal because of the bidirectional flow that's envisioned. So they went through this process. They had enormous amounts of testimony, and here's what we came out with. So the first thing I bring your attention to is the total. I bring your attention to the amount that each utility, this is Southern California Edison, this is the Pacific Gas and Electric Company, This is the San Diego Gas and Electric Company. It's going to take place over four staged competitive solicitations. One of the things they debated was how should you get the storage? Should you get it through other means other than a solicitation? Should the utility just go out and buy this stuff and then stick it on there? Instead, they decided that they would go through open solicitation processes that would be held at irregular intervals. They were very concerned about the rate at which the energy storage industry could gear up to meet this kind of new demand for their products. They also divided the applications, the amounts that that a company would have to get into transmission, distribution, and customer segments. So again, it was a very deliberative process about thinking about how they would meet this mandate, both over time, by utility service territory, and by the sort of particular application that they would be willing to consider. They also passed a number of rules, again, to sort of tailor this to sort of where is the low-hanging fruit, where are the barriers the greatest, where are the ones that the utility should be trying to address. So, for example, pumped hydro, which is already commercially viable, is essentially ruled out from being participating for installations of over 500 megawatts. They recognized that these solicitations might not work exactly as they were planned and from year to year, so there's an opportunity to defer the procurement from one year to the next, although you don't have an opportunity to reduce the total. You can do some trading between the transmission and distribution requirements for a given utility service territory, but you cannot trade across the utility service territories for how you meet these commitments. And then finally, the utility cannot own more than 50% of these. So again, a lot of very specific rules on how the procurements will be implemented, stemming from sort of the assessment of the barriers and the appropriate world for a public policy in this setting. This is the slide I'm going to conclude with. This is the regulatory process that we just concluded this fall, in which the procurement targets for the first year were articulated for each of the utilities. And so at the top, going across the top, you have the requirements by utility. But then they netted against that applications that were already in progress. In particular, in Southern California, many of you have heard that one of our large nuclear power stations will never come back into service. That's created a significant challenge in what's called the South Coast Air Basin. This is the area that's sort of straddling the area between Los Angeles and San Diego. And so the Public Utilities Commission, independent of this proceeding, ordered Southern California Edison to acquire 1,400 megawatts of new capacity, of which 50 megawatts must be storage. So they're already sort of on the hook for storage here, and they're already in procurement to buy a lot of this storage, and therefore their requirement in the first year has been bought down by that amount. So anyway, these amounts that are to be procured in this first solicitation, that with which the solicitations will be actually issued next month, vary by utility, and have been netted against sort of existing commitments that have been made. So with that, I'm going to conclude, and I'll look forward to the discussion at the end of the session.